Well, let's take this time for a moment now to acknowledge how grateful I am for another opportunity to come forward and to be able to speak to you guys once again. You know, over the time that I've had to be able to go out to speak to you guys in the Porterville and out the tap has honestly made such an impact upon my life that I'm always extending such a level of gratitude for what it is, because I can tell you, over this time that I've been doing this, the studies I've done, I would not have done near a fraction of as much study if it wasn't for the opportunity that I've received from you guys. So I wanted to extend my gratitude for that reason. Now, moving into my lesson today, it was not that long ago that I came across an interesting story that was online. You know, it's one about two men, and they went to a gay pride event. Now, these two men, they were Christian evangelists, and so they were looking to be able to spread the word of Jesus. So they come over to this event that's going on. They come up with signs and with Bible. So the sign that they had read on it that Jesus saves and heals, and to repent and be forgiven. Now, as they were going on, and as people were walking by, they were noticing the signs that had been presented there. And as time went on, these people who were speaking out, they were doing it in a way to try not to offend. You know, they weren't actually saying, you know, you guys, your homosexuality will make you burn in hell. They were doing something to make these people off-put and even to turn them away. What they were doing is they were trying to get them interested in Jesus. They were trying to tell them, hey, listen, Jesus is going to save you. So they were putting forth a message that was something that wasn't going to be shut off by these people so quickly, because it wasn't something that was intended to offend them. But at the same time, as my story continues, there were some people from out of this event that was going on. They came up and started to shove the people that were holding the signs. They started to try and pry the signs from them, and it escalated to a point where one of the members of the event ended up punching and knocking one of these people down. One of these evangelists. Now, even if you don't think that these men had the right approach with the choices that they had made going into this event the way that they had done, the two evangelists, that is, what we know is that the response that had been taken by the parade marchers, by the event goers, that it was wrong that they had actually acted out in such a way that they would be, you know, violent and aggressive towards these evangelists. Now, why did these people have such a reaction towards the Christians? I can't tell you exactly what their intentions were, but one factor that I can assume that's at play here is the view that the world has towards Christians. In a lot of ways, people think of Christians as a judgmental and a condemning group of people. You know, out to immediately start to tear you down the second they find the opportunity. And that's the type of mindset that some people may have, and that may be a factor that she puts here. But now I have another story for you. And this is the original story when I come across the line of shame. This is the original story that I've been looking for. So, what is taking place in this other story is it sets up side by side. They both of these stories, they have similar plot. They set up nearly the same way. You have some Christians who are going to a gay pride parade. And at this parade, the marchers that are going along, you know, who are trying to support this, the Christians who were against this had opposing views and gone up to these marchers. And they started to beat them over the head with the Bibles. And they'd gone to the point of spitting on the people who were attending the parade. Like I said, these are very similar stories side by side. They look almost exactly, I mean, when you set them up, but the thing is, the difference between the two is who the antagonist is and who the protagonist is for your story changes. Or who your good guy and your bad guy, you know. It's different from each story, but the thing is there's one thing that we can learn from what this story shows us, and what that is that we are all susceptible to sin. We are all susceptible to making this mistake that was made by both parties here. And what was the mistake that had been made? When you look at the stories, the one fatal flaw that had taken place is that the aggressor in each story had passed judgment on the opposing side. Just like what we have seen in something that I brought forward to you guys a couple of times, 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 13. And here we have Paul speaking to us. And, you know, he starts to point out something that is the same issue that these people who were participating as the aggressor has committed the same issue. So it says in verse 13, even though I was formerly a blasphemer and a persecutor and a violent aggressor, yet I was shown mercy because they acted ignorantly and unbelief. So like I said, this is something that I've covered before, and you know, it shows that we are all capable of sin, as I said before as well, that you know, because Paul too is somebody who's putting himself down as a persecutor and a violent aggressor. And when I had talked before, the things that I had defined was a blasphemer is to speak out against somebody, a persecutor is to be exactly what somebody is a judge, and a violent aggressor who was sentencing from being a judge. He made a sentence and then he acted out accordingly. And that's exactly what the people in our stories did as well. You know, they saw what was going on, they made a judgment on the opposing side, people with a different view, and then they carried out their sentencing. You know, their aggressive action, that was the sentence that they deemed necessary for the judgment that they had passed. So, is what the people in our story today did, as well as when I brought this first lesson here, covered in great detail, like I said, is they were being a judge. So that leads me into today's topic, and that is judgment. So if I wasn't already clear, like I said, our focus is going to be going on to judgment. And I'm glad that last Sunday morning, Randy gave a lesson about building one another up, because it does kind of play side by side with what it is I have prepared for my lesson today. So something that the existence of these stories, as far as this goes, because we realize now this, that these people were acting in a judgmental way. Something that the existence of these stories should show us is that we as Christians, we're in a digital age. And why is that relevant? Why does it matter? Because nowadays everybody has a phone. You know, and everybody's taking videos of one another. And they're taking a video of each other sometimes in their weakest place. You know, one reason I learned about that first video that I had talked about was because somebody recorded the incident. And after 3 days, that incident grew up to 5,000 views. You know, this is, it was something that had become very popular, and people were able to watch it when it was taking place. And so, the thing that we need to keep in mind is that we as Christians are always being watched. That, in essence, is what I was trying to say. You know, we're always, people are always watching what it is that we're doing, and waiting for us when we are at our weakest moments to be able to take advantage of that. So, in fact, the way I came to this lesson is something that I think that we all should consider as well. You know, when I try to think of a lesson, I ask myself, because I've been talking a lot lately about being an example for the rest of the world. So I was thinking to myself about what lesson I can come up with that would have to do with being an example. So I approached the idea, and then I kind of started thinking, you know what, maybe I should take it from the other side. What's a bad example that we can follow? And that's kind of where I started when I was building my lesson today. What's a bad example? So the negative thing that people associate with the image of a Christian, and like I said before, the faith that I have come to, and the reason that this is so important to me, is that I approached this with the idea that maybe this image of Christians hold, and I came up with the thing that the overarching idea that I come up with was that Christians are judgmental. That's something that I hear a lot from other people, the people of the world. And so that's why I thought it would be a good thing for us to start to cover this in our lesson today. So then I need to ask a question. So we're going to look in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 20. And the question that I need to ask is, are we supposed to be judgmental as Christians? Is that something that is intended for? So in 2 Corinthians 5, 20 it says, therefore we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were making an appeal through us. We beg you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. So we need to ask ourselves, is the title of judge one that we should wear with pride as a Christian? You know, the title being someone who's judgmental. Or is it something that we need to avoid as not to give a bad name to Christians? And therefore giving a bad name to Jesus and to God as the extension as well. Because we are the ambassador for God. We're his representatives here on earth. So what our actions do, what our actions are, represent God. So we need to consider that whenever we are in any aspect of our lives as we are? Are we being that ambassador for God? Because we are the ones who make an appeal to the world on the Lord's behalf. That's what he tells us that we are to be doing. He says, as though God were making an appeal through us, we beg you on behalf of Christ be reconciled to God. So, is that title being judgmental something that we should wear more badly on as Christians? So, I started to look to try to answer this question. And what I found probably won't shock you. I started looking at the Bible, and I found a great many verses that tell us not to judge. One example of these verses is Matthew 7, 1 through 5. It says, I plan a day that we are not to judge. So I'll start reading here in verse 1. Do not judge, so that you will not be judged. For in the way you judge, you will be judged, and by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, and behold, the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. So we're being told here that we're not to judge. And why is it that we are not to judge? Well, because we have a log in our own eye, while our brother has a speck. No, we too are in sin. We too are subject to the same thing that our brother is subjected to. Now, something that we have also been told, something that grand comes, that it is our duty to rebuke our brother when they are wrong. But we need to be sure, when it comes down to it, we're not doing it with the wrong type of intention. What is our intention when we go in to rebuke our brother? Is it to lift ourselves up and maybe feel superior to somebody else? When you start taking that type of approach, you move over from trying to rebuke them to being judgmental towards them. So, really, the difference there in this point here is the intention behind what it is that you're doing, what is it that you're trying to present. And that's the big difference I found between being judgmental and rebuking someone, or judging or rebuking, is the intention behind what it is that you have to say. We're also given an example of who it is that is the judge. And that comes from James 4, 11 and 12. We're giving here a clear answer into who judges the world and why we are not to judge ourselves. So it says in verse 11, do not speak against one another, brother. He who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge of it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you who judge your neighbor? So again, here we're being told that we're not supposed to be judging our brother here. That we're not supposed to judge the law, because by doing so we are no longer, we're not a doer of the law, but we are a judge of the law. And by what authority do we have to make these judgments? God does not extend to us the authority. That is something that I have talked about in the previous lesson, is that all authority comes from God. And if God does not extend this authority to us, then we have no authority by which to start to act out of it. Now, the reason that it is there is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and to destroy. The one who created us is capable of destroying us. He is the one with the ultimate authority. And I, for one, honestly, I'm glad that a perfect God is my judge, rather than a flawed human. Because we are not, as humans, intended to judge the world. That is God's responsibility. That's what God is here for. So what does it mean for us? Well, it means that we don't know who's going to heaven or hell. Ultimately, that's what it is telling us. Because it's not up to us to decide, and because we do not know the intentions of anybody but ourselves, we're not capable of making that decision, that judgment. Something that we're not able to do, because like I said, we as well are in sin. If you think about, as well, like I said, you never know the intentions of the person behind the act action. So whenever it is that we go to judge, we don't know what it is that they're thinking. And you can think of, for instance, a story like with David. David was a man after God's own heart. And yet David was somebody who had committed sexual immorality. He also had committed murder. And yet he was somebody who his repentant heart was able to be considered someone after God's own heart. And so sometimes we can sit here and think for ourselves, how is it somebody who committed such an act as murder, especially one because of the lust of the flesh, like what David had done? But what was it that made him a man after God's own heart? It was his repentant heart. So like I say, we don't know the intentions of the man. We don't know man's heart, and that's why we're unfit to judge our fellow man. Another example, we don't know whether the person who came to church wearing only a t-shirt and jeans, if it's their best clothes or not. Because sometimes you can say, you know, you're not dressed to be presented in front of God. But how is it that we know that that is actually, if that is the person's best dress or not? You know, there was a conversation I was having not too long ago about a church that what they do is they turn away anybody that they say is not dressed up enough to be able to present themselves in front of God. So the thing is, if that is their best dress, then they are dressed. They do have the heart in which to be able to present themselves before God. They are of a ready mind, because we don't know what it is that their circumstances are and everything going on around other people. So it's not up to us to judge the world. All we have is the Bible and what it says. So all we can do is try to approach people with the Word and study it ourselves, and not to study it ourselves. It's not up to us to say who is able to hear the Lord's Word. And in essence, that's what those people are doing, is trying to be who is fit in order to be able to hear the Lord's word. So by rejecting and turning people away, they're saying, you're not fit to hear. You're not fit to receive the grace of our Lord. See, I believe by telling us not to judge, we're being told to keep our intentions in check, as well as not to overstep our bounds. So what is it that we are doing? Well, we have a great example that's provided to us in Jesus. You know, we can see in Mark chapter 2, verse 15 through 17, what it is that Jesus had done during his time on earth. He spent his time with sinners. Mark 2, 15 through 17 reads, "And it happened that he was reconciling at the table in his house. And many tax collectors and sinners were dining with Jesus and his disciples. So there were many of them, and they were full of him. When the scribes and the Pharisees saw that he was eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they said to his disciples, 'Why is he eating and drinking with tax collectors and sinners?' And hearing this, Jesus said to them, 'Is it not those who are healthy? Or it is not those who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners.'" So, what it's saying here is, in the situation with those people, we're going to turn away those who were not dressed properly, those who they deem to be unworthy. That's the exact thing that's going on here. The scribes are seeing what Jesus is doing and saying, "Hey, aren't these people supposed to be unworthy to be the Son of God? You claim to be the Son of God. Why is it that you're spending your time with these people?" And he said, "You know who need you the most? Are the sinners. And so that's who it is that I'm going to spend my time on. Those are the people who need to hear the teachings the most, that need to be able to understand what it is that the Bible says." So it's not a judgment that he's going down upon the matter, but instead something that he is bringing forth to him. He's bringing forth to them the information that of what Jesus offers and the sacrifice that he has been, of what it is that he gets, of what you can get through the kingdom through Jesus. So there is a way to misinterpret the point that it is that I was getting at, and you know, that is with that we do need to spend our time teaching the sinners. And the point that you can disconstrue from that is maybe, you know, you can say, "Hey, well, I got a friend over here who's going to do some, you know, receive his D, and so, you know, the strip club. If I'm afraid of going over to the strip club, so, you know, I need to spend some time with sinners, maybe I should do that as well. But, I mean, it's really in the situation to do what you want. So obviously, that's not, don't misinterpret my point to sound that way, but what we do need to hear is when Jesus spent his time with sinners, he did so talking about God, his love, grace, mercy, and his work. So we should do the same. If we only spent time with wholesome people, who would the world learn about God? Now, again, going back to my irrational way to live those things, you can say, okay, great, all I have to do is talk about God, I'm free to go. That's, again, manipulating the situation to get what it is that we want out of it. But going back to what is it then that we are to be doing here, is that we are to be ambassadors for God. That was what I was getting back to earlier, is we need to teach others about him. We are to act on this earth as God's representatives on this earth, to make an appeal to the world. And don't forget that we're being watched by those who are ready to persecute us as Christians, those waiting for us to mess up, trying to find fault in God by watching those, by watching the Lord's servants. Because there are people out there who are ready to do that. So we need to keep in mind, what is it that my actions are saying? What is, how do I represent Jesus? How do I represent God? Am I being a proper ambassador for him? You know, we should turn away from the image of judge thy neighbor and try to look to the image of love thy neighbor. Because when people think of Christians, they shouldn't think of somebody who's ready to damn me and condemn me to the depths of hell. They should be thinking of somebody who's ready to love me. You know, somebody who's ready to embrace me and help me become a part of Christ. Somebody who's ready to teach me and bring me more information if I desire so. Not somebody looking to make separation. Somebody to looking to unite. So, going back to the story that the two stories that I talked about at the very beginning of this lesson, the two marches that are going on. Now, do you think it is more likely for the person that hit the Bible, or that hit somebody with the Bible, do you think it would be likely for that person, if they wanted to know more about God, to come back to the person that hit them on top of the head with the Bible? Do you think that's something that they would do? Who do you think is more likely to talk to others about God? Do you think it's going to be the person who acts out with aggression and judgment? Or do you think the person who acts out peacefully? Now, don't forget that Jesus came as the Prince of Peace. When you were looking for a militant leader, he came as the Prince of Peace. Knowing myself that God is the only God, I trust that he knows the best. Okay. Knowing God's all knowing God, I trust he knows the best method for spreading his word. And since we are now his ambassadors, don't you think that the way that we spread his word should look more and more like the way that he spread his word, rather than our intentions for how we think it should be done? What I'm going to do now is read through to you guys a song out of Hymns for Worship Supplemental, Psalm number 38. It's something that some of you may be familiar with. I believe it's been talked about in a couple of different ladies' Bible studies. So some of you may be familiar with this. It's called The Apples in the Sea. It's got a really powerful message. It says, in the fruitful tree there is an apple, deep within the apple may be seen. So the Father set all things in order, knowing just what everything will mean. You may count the seeds within the apple. You may count the apples on the tree. You may count the trees within the orchard. Who can count the apples in a sea? Who can count the apples in a sea? Who can say how much the fruit will grow? Who can know the harvest of tomorrow? Who can count the apples in a sea? So that first verse is the overarching theme of the song. And it says, who can count the apples in a sea? Any one of us, if we see a tree, we can sit there and we can count how many apples are on it. We take an apple, we can cut it up, we can count how many seeds are. But only God knows the future and knows what it holds. Only God can look at a seed and says, if that seed is planted, it will provide you with X amount of apples. God's the only one who can do that. Read with me now, I'll read to you guys now from verse 3 of the psalm. It says, do not doubt that someone will believe it. though 100 years and turn away. For if only one heart will receive it, through the one, 1,000 may obey. It may be a gentle man of 90, it may be a child of only 10. So the precious seed to the Almighty, you can watch it multiply again. Who can count the apples in the seed? Who can say how far the word will go? Who can know the harvest of tomorrow? Who can count the apples in the seed? So here it is talking about, you know, the situation where somebody is presenting the word and 100 people turn away. But you know what? Only takes one person to listen. And from that one person who listens, 1,000 people could ultimately be saved. That one person could end up, by extension, helping you to save 1,000 souls. You know, it's kind of like a butterfly effect, you know. And we don't pick and choose who it is that we tell the word of the Lord to. You know, it says, it could be a gentleman of 90, it may be a child of only 10. You'll never know what it is our actions will lead to. Now, going back to that story, one more time that I was told about those markers. And in that situation, that person that they hit over the head, what if that was the person that would have led to 1,000 to obey? And by that single action, that person had stopped the opportunity for them to be able to save 1,000 souls. You know, John 3:17 is something else I think we should consider as I get ready to wrap up this lesson. It says, for God did not send the Son into the world to judge the world, but that the world might be saved through him. You know, when the Pharisees were talking about why is it that Jesus is spending his time with these sinners, as if sinners should be poisoned to Jesus, the Son of God. But in all truthfulness, Jesus was the antidote for sin. And so he's saving these people from their sin. And that's exactly what we need to be telling everybody else as well. We don't need to tell them about the ways in their, that they're doing wrong at every turn that we possibly can. We're not supposed to be nitpicking everyone, but we need to be telling the world about everything that the Lord offers us. Something else that Jesus is willing to do for us is what's said in Romans 8:34. Who's the one who condemns? Christ Jesus is he who died rather, who was raised. Who is it at the right hand of God who also intercedes for us? So being told that Jesus is going to be interceding for us. So what is it that intercede means? It's to find us to intervene on behalf of another. So when it comes down to it, we see the example that Jesus had led for us. And as his ambassadors, we need to be sure that our methods and how it is that we look for our walk and teaching others should try to look as similar as we possibly can for how it is that Jesus has walked on his walks. So now at this time, I would like to extend to you guys the invitation. Something that we do at the end of every service. And if it at all applies to you in any way, we'd like to know, you know, if you've been considering about coming to Jesus, and you just haven't taken that time yet, and why not tonight, the song says. If you have questions, if you need more information, then please let that be known as together we all stand.